Okay, well, we have a really exciting session planned, and so let's go ahead and get started. Welcome. Thank you for joining us today. I am just honored and thrilled to be joined by Olivia, Colby, and Paige. So they will introduce themselves, and you will get to learn and hear their beautiful perspectives and insights and really learn from the wisdom that they have experienced as walking this journey with their parent who has younger onset dementia. So I'm just so thrilled. Thank you, Connor, for your all of your help on the tech side. Thank you all for being here, for those that I just am meeting now and those that I will have the opportunity to hopefully connect with after. Thank you for being here. I want to start just talking a little bit about my journey and about Lorenzo's house, and then we'll hop in. I have a ton of really wonderful questions. They have done incredible work preparing their time, and so I want to make sure we get through the questions, and then we'll leave some time at the end for any additional questions. I'm Patty, and I am the program's lead for Lorenzo's House, which is a virtual nonprofit organization. We meet in Zoom rooms just like this, that empowers the families affected by younger onset dementia. But more important than all of that, my beautiful mom walked with younger onset dementia. So my mom bravely walked with this condition for about 10 years. And so I reached out to Lorenzo's House as a daughter myself, and I ended up in a Zoom room just like these lovely individuals that are with us, with our founder, Diana, and it was the first time I really felt seen and understood. Diana founded Lorenzo's House when her beautiful husband, Larry, but they called him Lorenzo, was diagnosed with younger onset Alzheimer's. Her boys were 9 and 13 when brain change showed up in her home, and she was looking for a connection for her as a spouse who was walking this journey with her beautiful man, but she was looking for a place for her boys. She was looking for somewhere where they could find community and connection. Diana's background was that she is an entrepreneur. She had built a network of charter schools on the south side of Chicago. And so she said, you know, we always joke on her youngest son's bedroom on a post-it note, Lorenzo's House was born as a place for families to come together and connect. So we are 4 years in. We were founded in 2021, and we are now serving families in 49 states and 16 different countries. And so we had the honor. These are some of our incredible youth leads. We have a virtual youth summit that takes place every June. Colby right there is actually our MC this year for our virtual youth summit. But they all come with a wealth of knowledge and experience. And I am just so, so honored to be the moderator for this panel and to spend time with these three people that I admire so deeply. And so I'm so excited. So let's get started. The first question is going to be introductions. So, Colby, will you start us off? Can you share a little bit about your personal story? Tell us about yourself, your age, your grade, your location. What do you love to do? And what brought you to Lorenzo's House?
Hi, everybody. I'm Colby. I'm 16 years old from Roseville, California. And I'm a junior in high school. And I love hanging out with my friends, playing piano, and just being in nature in general. At 14 years old, my father was diagnosed with early onset frontotemporal dementia. My mother found Lorenzo's House and introduced it to me. And although I was hesitant at first to participate, it really grew on me, and Lorenzo's House became a staple in my life, opening up a whole new world of resources and opportunities for me.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Colby. And Colby, I'm going to share this story because it's one of my favorite things. So when Colby started joining our light clubs, which are our virtual spaces for children, teens, and young adults, he always came with his camera off and he participated. He was like the biggest hype man in the chat, but he always came with his camera off. And last year, I think at this time, we were like, Colby, would you like to be a youth lead? And he was like, I would love to. Camera on. And now he's the 2025 Youth Summit MC. So just so amazing and just such a gift you are, Colby. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Patty.
Yeah, thanks for letting me share that. Sorry, I feel like I always share that story. I'm like, he's probably like, Patty, she's doing it again.
It is all good.
Olivia, would you introduce yourself next?
Yeah, my name is Olivia Compton. I am 16 years old and in California. I love writing, reading, playing video games, watching anime, learning cello and piano, singing, and running track. And around 8 years ago, my father was diagnosed with young onset Lewy body dementia, and he passed away just a year ago. So I came to Lorenzo's house looking to engage with other kids whose parents are facing the same diagnosis and to learn more about handling it. And what I found was a community of supportive friends.
Thank you. Thank you, Olivia. And Olivia is actually going to be a youth lead at our summit this year. I think this will be your third year being a youth lead at Youth Summit. So my first year being at Lorenzo's house, I was partnered with Olivia. So we got to lead a session together. So at Youth Summit, we always, all of our sessions are co-led by a young person that has either walking this journey with a parent or has, either is currently or has. And so I got partnered with Olivia and it was my first summit. And I think she had been part of Lorenzo's House Light Clubs for a while. And so she taught me the way. So I just really admire Olivia's bravery and vulnerability and courage in how she shares and the way she thinks so deeply. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks. Thanks, Olivia. And Paige, will you introduce yourself next?
Yeah, hi. My name is Paige Sinsali. I am 23 years old. I'm from Washington State. I'm a sophomore at Brown University, but I'm currently studying abroad in Granada, Spain right now. And my mom was diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's 2 years ago. And my mom's diagnosis kind of came at an incredibly bad time. And I think there's never a good time for an Alzheimer's diagnosis, but I felt like mine was kind of comically bad. And it's because her diagnosis came 2 years almost to the day of when my dad passed away. And then the following month, I received a letter in the mail that I was accepted on a full ride to Brown University, meaning I had to choose between being a full-time caregiver and turning down the scholarship or taking the scholarship and kind of what felt like leaving her behind. And so I took some time to really think about what this decision meant for the trajectory of the rest of my life and everything I would gain and lose by either staying or going. And I ultimately ended up taking the opportunity because I felt like I could not only just help my family, but I could also help other caregiving families by in the future by the resources that college could provide. And sorry, this story is going to be a little, I wanted to just share like a really quick story too, because it was kind of a foundational part
please.
Too.
Yes, you're good. We want to hear the story.
Maybe 2 days before I left for my flight to Brown, I found this scene. So I'm going to share my screen real quick. And what you're looking at here is my mom had taken one of our dining room chairs and stuck it in a tree. And I had no idea why she would do this. And I, as caregivers, we know that there aren't a lot of explanations for a lot of reasons for why a person with dementia does a lot of the things that they do. But for me, I needed an explanation for this one, at least. So I went into the kitchen that day. I asked her what was going on. She didn't remember. So I took her outside and I took her to where the chair was perched in the tree on the side of our home. And I asked, like, what is this? What's going on? Why did you put the chair in the tree? And, we're both looking at it, and then she laughs, she remembers, and she turns to me and says, because the squirrels need somewhere to sit. So when I left for Brown 2 days later, I wrote about this moment for my English class. I wrote about how her actions are now regressing into childlike behaviors, and because she has always been a kind and caring person, her response to the turmoil inside of her is to make sure that others are happy, no matter how silly it could look, because after all, the squirrels do need a place to sit. And because it was an English class, we were learning more about, more deeply about how our writing can transform like the images we wanted to talk about. And so I noticed that between tangled and intertwined between the arms and one of the chair legs are these blackberry vines. And like Alzheimer's, the species of blackberries in our yard are the invasive kind. The vines are thick and the thorns make it difficult to eradicate, and you can't wait long when you see the signs. You have to do something about it now to keep things under control. And later in this panel, I'll explain more about how I'm coping as a caregiver to keep everything under control. And Lorenzo's house is one of the only reasons I am barely keeping everything under control. But for now, the tree is still recognizable. And I know that one day, as like the ivy thickens and the disease progresses, the chair and my mom won't be.
Thank you, Paige. Thank you for sharing that. And Paige, she is such a deep thinker, as you can hear, all three of them are. But something that Paige did is that she really has been leaning in and interviewing and listening to other carers in our community in really powerful ways as a way to really help to raise awareness and to elevate the wisdom. So thank you so much, Paige, for sharing that and for being here. I also want to name something. So especially at Lorenzo's house, we often don't refer to our sons and daughters as carers or caregivers because there's so much stigma that can be with that word. And so we'll often talk a lot about we are a son or a daughter of younger onset dementia. We're not a carer or a caregiver. And it's something that we think about a lot in our conversations because so often we have this beautiful 9-year-old boy. Oh, he's 10 now. I'm sorry. He will always correct me in my heart. He's always 9. We have this beautiful 10-year-old boy from Philadelphia. And we were having a conversation. I had a beautiful opportunity to play ping pong in the park with him because we were at AAIC and him and his mom and I were having this beautiful conversation. And I was like, oh, you're a young carer. You know, me being naive and figuring out what that means and how we're going to have this conversation. And he's like, Patty, I'm not a caregiver. I just ride my bike home from school every day so that I can sit with my dad so my mom can work for a couple hours. I was like, okay. He's like, that's just my dad. I'm just helping out my dad. I'm just hanging out with my dad, right? So you'll hear a lot in this panel and in the conversations and the questions that I'm going to pose that I'm not going to always refer to them as carers or caregivers or care partners or refer to Olivia and Colby and Paige as sons or daughters. But it also doesn't mean if that's the word that they want to use to identify their experience, then that's okay too. But I just want to frame that in the language that I'll be using for the questions. The next question, I'm going to start with you, Colby, and then Paige. What does being a son or daughter of younger onset dementia mean to you, and how has it shaped your daily life?
Thank you, Patty. Being a son of younger onset to me means advocacy. After feeling so alone for so long, I knew I had to take initiative. And I really wanted to put myself out there and share my story to as many as I could reach. Since 2022, the way my daily life has looked changes constantly as the disease progresses. Some days are better than others, and having patience and empathy plays a major role in understanding and connecting to your person.
Thank you. Thank you, Colby. Paige?
Yeah, so the year my mom was still getting her formal diagnosis, I was expecting it because the signs were pretty clear. So I started educating myself on Medicaid and Medicare to secure her benefits. I felt like I was being waterboarded with a bunch of information because it's such a confusing and tedious system that we have. There's a lot of different rules and exceptions for everything. And because my dad passed away, there was nobody else who could care for this. I had to make sure I was doing everything correctly without making a mistake, because mistakes lead to delays, and delays can mean months without receiving the income that she was entitled to. And so when I was 22, I was waiting long hours at the Social Security office. I attended street law clinics to draft her will. I filed the paperwork to become her power of attorney, because I knew that if I wanted to go to college, I had to get all of this paperwork in place first. And but even so, being a caregiver from a distance is still incredibly overwhelming, no matter how much paperwork you file. And with Alzheimer's, it brings paranoia, and her belief that everybody is stealing around her leads to a lot of disputes with neighbors. And those disputes happen during my lectures and classes, and I'll have to step out of class to de-escalate arguments. I've even had to skip class to go to court to block her from purchasing a firearm. And most of all, her denying the diagnosis complicates everything further, because I'm the only one that she can trust, so she relies solely on me. And that leads to a lot of burnout, too. So with every year of the diagnosis, things get worse, my responsibilities increase, and I can't be like an every average 23-year-old. I have to decide whether to pursue opportunities or limit them to be within arm's reach of my mom. But I also want to quickly add too that in college, I've crafted my time and experiences to platform the voices of caregivers. This includes like facilitating a 7-week ethnographic study that I did with caregivers of Lorenzo's house to discuss when they have to choose between living their lives versus putting on hold to take care of a parent with dementia. And what do those decisions mean for the rest of our lives? And as I start preparing for my thesis, I'll be centering it around putative Medicaid rules too. So this diagnosis has really became my focus for advocacy regarding caregivers as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Paige. I think something that just really resonated out of both of what you said is this advocacy piece, right? And then something that you said, Colby, is the power of sharing your story. Because when we share our story and we tell our story, not only does it empower ourselves, but it empowers others because they feel seen and heard and understood. I walked this journey for about 9 years and didn't know another young carer until I ended up, you know, meeting Diana. And so just the power of advocacy as a way to raise awareness, but also advocacy in all the work that you're doing, Paige, to advocate for your mom. So thank you both for sharing. The next question, one of our taglines at Lorenzo's house is we bring light. And one part of that is that we bring light and we raise awareness, right? Younger onset is here. So often, even when I walked this journey with my mom, people would tell me that my mom was too young to have dementia, you know, and that's something that we've all talked about in Light Club, and we'll talk a little bit about Light Club too in a little bit. But, you know, this power of raising awareness and letting people know it's a condition. We don't know where to go. We don't know where to find each other. We need to be seen and understood. But the other part of bringing light is that we do believe in the power of connection, right? When you get connected with another person that understands your story, there's nothing like it. You create a sisterhood, you create this brotherhood. It really is this family. And so we talk a lot about how do we find those moments of connection and joy both externally and internally with our parent. And so Olivia, will you start us out for this question? Are there any moments of connection or joy that have been especially meaningful in your journey with your dad? Are there any particular memories or moments in your journey walking with a parent with younger onset dementia that have taught you something valuable?
So Christmas a few years ago, Mommy and I were decorating the tree, and we decided to bring Daddy into that, even though he really couldn't do any decorating, rather than having him sit quietly in the other room. And he came and stood with us to watch, and I had Mommy make one of the funny noises that he and his brother would use to greet each other. And he started laughing, and then we all started laughing. And then with a smile on his face, he looked a little healthier and a whole lot happier. And that was one of the more powerful moments of my journey. I saw that we could find bits of joy and occasions to smile, even while his health was degrading. I knew I needed to cherish those moments. And even when he was getting into the final stage, he smiled at me when I showed him my bowling ball. He loved bowling, even though he might not have known who I was. And those were the memories I needed to hold on to, even though they were rare, because they mean more than the poor and sad memories.
100%. Thank you for sharing that. It's just the power of when we have these opportunities to be in spaces together and to share these moments of connection that we have. It really is so powerful. We have what are called light clubs, which are our virtual support groups for children as young as 4. So we have 4 to 7, 8 to 12, 13 to 17, and 18 plus. And in these light clubs, we are not only connecting and having fun and doing silly questions, but we're also building these tools and strategies to show up for our person. Olivia can share that story so beautifully in light club, and another friend in light club is like, I can look for those moments of joy. I can use laughter as a tool to connect. I can show a picture of a bowling ball so that I can make my person laugh. And so they're really not only healing in community and finding these connections, but they're building some really powerful strategies and sharing their collective wisdom, right? Like, we didn't teach Olivia that that's a beautiful moment of joy. Olivia shared that and she taught others. Colby, would you mind sharing, answering that question as well? Do you want me to repeat the question or you feel good?
I'm good. Thank you,
okay.
Patty. For me personally, actually, one experience of connection that I can recall was actually last week. My grandma went to visit her doctor, and She knew of Lorenzo's house and the previous work I've done for them because she herself had a family member who had early onset. And this left me with the most amazing feeling. I felt so prideful, and it was one of my biggest accomplishments for being recognized for something that's so personal to me.
Yeah, the power of these connections that you, like, by you raising awareness and sharing your story and your grandma knowing those things, and she's able to raise awareness, and then we're able to meet other families. So thank you for sharing that, Colby. Paige, my next question is for you, and it is, what is important for a young person with a parent walking with younger onset dementia to know?
I would say that this will probably be the hardest thing you'll go through. And the only way to be helpful for your parent is to make sure that you don't neglect yourself either. It's also really easier said than done for lots of caregivers. But when I started this caregiving journey and getting my mom diagnosed, I stopped caring about anything for myself because I felt like I didn't deserve it. I felt that a lot of my time and intention had to be only on her. So I couldn't go to the gym anymore. I worried about every little thing that she was doing, and I could feel that the stress was killing me. So I learned which battles to fight, and I'm still learning which battles to fight too. And a lot of those battles depend a lot on the individual personality of your parent. My mom is incredibly stubborn, so when she doesn't want to do something, she'll never do it. And if she refuses to take her pills one day and only wants to eat ice cream for that entire day, then I'm sorry, I'm going to just let her do it, because there's not enough convincing in the world that would make her change her mind, especially if she's in one of those incredibly stubborn moods. So basically what I'm trying to say is give yourself grace. Of course you want what's best for your parent, but you can't kill yourself in the process because you deserve your life too.
100%. Thank you. That's so powerful. And that was something too, Paige, that I struggled with my mom, right? It was like, what are the moments? What are the battles? What are the things that we have to do? And what are the things that we can just let go of? And thank you for sharing that. And give yourself grace, right? The power of grace and patience. In Light Club, one of our community agreements is be gentle and kind with others, but also be gentle and kind with yourself. And so the power of just giving yourself grace. Thank you for bringing that point up. The next question is, how do you balance school, work, activities, friendships, and having a parent with younger onset dementia? How do you care for yourself while also supporting your parent? And Olivia, I'm going to let you start us off.
So even with the cost of caregiving and how hard it was to get daddy into the car, mommy always made sure that I had the opportunity to pursue my interests and activities that I liked. She drove and still drives me to my cello lessons, choir and orchestra practices, and concerts, along with our excursions. And she even worked hard to make sure my friends didn't get confused by daddy's behavior when they came in my car to the practices. And I did my best to help her with what I could so that she could take it easy and go out with her friends when she wanted to.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I think the power of just seeing, you know, what your other parent is doing and just really recognizing it is so beautiful. So thank you for sharing that. Paige, do you mind answering this question as well?
Yeah, so my Google Calendar looks like the pride flag with all of my color-coded reminders for the week. There's alerts to check her account balance because she's been falling for online scams. She actually fell for a Nigerian prince scam last month. So I now refill her debit card through an allowance system to prevent that from happening again. Something that a lot of caregivers will come to realize is that family can be some of the most disappointing people in your life. And by that, I mean they refuse to help or they disappear during the really hard parts of caregiving, of the caregiving journey. And so for that reason, good friends and people who also have been caregivers themselves are the people who I rely on the most to give me a breather, because they're the ones who consistently show up. And there's not just one person who does everything, but there's a bunch of different people who can help with a bunch of little things. So my best friend will go over to the house and fix a broken security camera. Another can restock the fridge. A neighbor will mow the grass. And as I'm studying abroad right now, I've had people call the police when the Nigerian prince scam happened. So it takes a village to do this. And in the community that I've built, we help each other out as much as we can when family doesn't help or step up the way that they should be.
Yeah. Thank you, Paige. I think such a powerful tool is this delegation, right? Like having your best friend, hey, can you go do this piece for me? And being able to name that those are the tasks that you need help with. So thank you. Colby, would you answer this question as well about balancing caregiving and being a 16-year-old that is working and going to school?
Yeah, thank you. And first, I want to say that I can totally relate to Paige on the monitoring spending. I remember it was probably a year after my father's diagnosis that he fell for an online scam for someone who he thought was his cousin, and he gave thousands of dollars to them, and there was no way of getting that back. And that really took a toll on our family. And yeah, but I'll be the first to admit that being a full-time student, a part-time caregiver, all while balancing a part-time job and having a social life hasn't been the easiest. And finding time for each of those aspects that make up who I am has been challenging. Personally, setting up a calendar, just like Paige has mentioned, planning my day hour by hour has been the most successful option for me. I know what to expect, and I don't see myself getting as overwhelmed. And one way that I take care of myself throughout this journey is being able to lean on my close friends. Having them listen to my daily struggles is so meaningful to me. Being able to just lean on them and having them understand is so amazing. And having me time, where I just spend time by myself, listening to music, going to the gym, going on nature walks, are all ways that I found to help me cope with this. And it really lets you disassociate from the whirlwind of younger onset.
Ooh, the whirlwind of younger onset, right? It's just like, it's just easy to get so wrapped up in all of those pieces. So thank you guys for all of your tips and ideas and strategies that you shared. And I think the power of friendships, the power of building that network and that community, just like, I mean, Paige, you know this, but my family didn't show up in the way that I expected or wanted them to show up. And my sister was probably the least involved person in my mom's care. And so how can you lean in and build your own support system is so important. So thank you, the three of you, for sharing those pieces. The next piece, you know, something that we talk about a lot too is that so often at Light Club, it's the first time that some of our children, teens, or young adults have ever shared their story. They've ever told another person about their mom's condition or their dad's brain change. And so we often talk about what in our teens specifically, in our 13 to 17-year-old group, is how do you start to tell one friend? How do you tell one teacher? How do you tell one basketball coach so that you can be seen and supported when you need that support and you need that help and understanding? And so, Olivia, the question for you is, have you shared your story with friends, teachers, or colleagues, and how did you navigate that?
So while Daddy was alive, I mostly kept his disease a secret from my friends, my teachers, or anyone else who didn't need to know. I figured they wouldn't understand and that they'd pity me rather than treat me normally. So I kept quiet until the day of his funeral, when I finally had to explain reluctantly why I was absent from school. And it was exactly what I expected. They apologized to me as if it was their fault. I really didn't want them to do that. It wasn't their fault. It wasn't anyone's fault. But they were all very respectful and kind about the whole thing and offered their assistance to me and my family and space to talk about anything. And since then, I've been sharing my story more through writing than anything. And I've written both a story and a poem talking about the way I felt when my dad passed away and the changes that our love underwent.
And that poem that Olivia wrote is so beautiful. In fact, you got what? Honorable mention for 5 different states in the poem that you submitted?
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. And thank you for sharing that, Olivia. I mean, that is so real. That's often a barrier, is this idea of others pitying you. And then you're finally brave enough to tell someone, and then you have to navigate their response. So often, even in Youth Summit and Light Club, we'll talk about how do you tell your story? And then once you tell your story, how do you navigate their response? And what responses are you just like gonna have tools and strategies in community to just know to ignore? So thank you for sharing that, Olivia. Paige, do you mind answering this question?
Yeah, so I've told most people at this point, and before I start a new semester, I'll always send an email to my professors and let them know if an emergency arises, I have to go home. And so far, Brown has been incredibly understanding about it all. But I tell people because I find that the more that I share, the more that I find people who are connected to Alzheimer's, and they become part of the community I've built to help keep everything afloat. One example I'll share of that is when I went to the Street Law Clinic to help prepare the will. I was waiting in the waiting room, and then the lawyer called me to the table, and I was there for the appointment, and I was saying I needed to get a will drafted, and they go, "Oh, this is just like a 10-minute consult, like free advice we can give you. We don't actually draft any purposeful paperwork." And I was telling her how I was leaving for Brown for my first semester in a couple days. And I really have to get this done because it's going to be really hard from across the country. And she has Alzheimer's, and there's really no one here to help me with it. And she goes, "Oh, my husband has Alzheimer's. Like, I understand it." I was like, "Okay, can you understand it a little bit more and help me draft this book?" She was like, yes. And so she has become basically my guardian angel with a lot of things. She's been helping me navigate a lot of Medicaid loopholes, and she helped draft the will. She's just been somebody who I can rely to, and she's been doing everything pro bono. And I know I'm one of the lucky ones who even has that opportunity, but there are a lot of angels in this world. And I think when you find those people who, you find more of those people when you do overshare a little bit.
100%. I mean, that's what I hear from both of you, right? Is Olivia, you were like, "I never told anyone." And then when I finally started to tell people, they showed up supported. They were supportive, you know? And Paige, what a beautiful gift. I mean, I often talk about how, I mean, sometimes some of the best connections that I have made is just when I'm at the grocery store or at a coffee shop and someone's like, "Oh, what are you doing?" Or, "What's Lorenzo's house?" I often get asked if I'm a realtor. And like, why do I look like a realtor? I'm like, "Oh, Lorenzo's house. Yeah, for sure." But then I start to share what we do, and I have some of the best connections, either supporting our mission with, you know, we're a nonprofit organization. So we've met some incredible donors, or we've met some people who have invited us to their podcast to share our stories, or they've been like, "My best friend's sister has younger onset dementia." And then that family is seen, and then we're able to get them access to our resources, and we are able to connect with them. So it just speaks to the power of sharing your story as a way to connect with others and to get support, but also raise awareness, right? Like, let's tell the world we're here. We're not a small niche. There's 4 million people worldwide affected by younger onset dementia. And we talk at Lorenzo's house that there's 4 million people that are walking with this condition. If the average family is 4 people, that's 16 million people that are affected. Because you can't tell me that Colby and Paige and Olivia are not affected by this condition as deeply intimate as the person walking with it, or as the care partner's spouse, or whoever that is. We're all impacted. Diana, our founder, I wish she was here. She's incredible. She's much better than me. But she often says it's younger onset dementia is a diagnosis of the family. So real. So thank you guys. The next question is for you, Paige, and it's what are the roadblocks that are the most challenging within our system?
So dementia is not just about forgetting what you said. It comes with severe paranoia, wandering, incontinence, unbalanced eating, just to name a few. And so eventually 24-hour care is essential for their safety. But we know that memory care facilities can cost upwards to $100,000 a year in this country, and the majority of people can't afford it. So families, once we exhaust our personal resources, we turn to Medicaid, because Medicaid's our country's only system that provides long-term care, like memory care facilities and home health aides through the government. But as I've realized on this caregiving journey, and as a lot of other caregiving families also learned, is that there is a really cruel consequence buried in the terms and conditions of Medicaid, and it's called, it's essentially housing dispossession. The Medicaid provision specifically is called the 5-year look-back rule. And Medicaid says that if you put your loved one in a nursing home, memory care facility, or use a home health aid or any form of long-term care assistance, and you own a home or you're paying off a mortgage, then Medicaid will put a debt against your home for the sticker price of what those services cost. So that means Medicaid will try to take your house away if you don't pay them back for the end-of-life care services. And this rule is concealed really well, and they use a euphemism called estate recovery, and that's what's buried in the terms and conditions. So while thousands of people in the U.S. are worrying about their loved ones' health and are grieving at the same time, the concealed five-year look-back rule will strip families of their land, of their homes, and further destabilize at least the next generation. And there are ways to get around this, but that means hiring a really savvy elder law attorney, or hoping to, like in my case, bump into somebody who has a huge heart to even work with you to get around this pro bono. But those who don't, the lawyer fees cost about $400 an hour. And again, remember, the people who need these attorneys are the families who've exhausted all of their resources to qualify for Medicaid. So now you have a system for the poor that costs thousands to access it. So the main roadblock is that this country just has a healthcare system that only helps the wealthiest of families.
Yeah. Thank you. You know, something that we talk about a lot too is Social Security disability and how challenging it can be to qualify for that system. And we have some families within Lorenzo's house that have been in a 2 to 3 year process to try to get qualification for something that they've paid into and that they deserve access to. So the amount of advocacy that family caregivers have to do when there are very few systems or very few resources is so challenging. So thank you, Paige, for sharing about that. The next question is more about support systems, so both formally or informally, and what has been the most helpful for you. And then I know we've touched a little bit on, you know, friends and the power of community, but really, what role has community played in your journey, and how did you find support? And Colby, I'm going to start with you.
Thank you, Patty. You know, for me personally, a major and constant support system that I have found helpful is Lorenzo's house. I can always count on Light Club after a long, tiring day to be a comforting space where I'm around people who just understand. And in my own community from California, I am so beyond fortunate to have family friends who coordinate meal trains and help with landscaping and always just being there for my family in general. I'm so lucky.
It's just so powerful, right? The power of these people in your community that show up for things like helping with landscaping or meal trains, and then the power of this virtual community that the three of you have created, right? I just get to be in these Zoom rooms with the three of you, but you are creating those spaces and really leading the way and sharing your story and inspiring others. So thank you. Paige, what about you?
Mine's a pretty similar response to Colby. I think when you're in these sort of support groups, you're able to meet people who are at different stages of the journey. And so you ask people what to do next when this kind of issue happens with your parents. And I feel like that's been a really helpful way to navigate my mom's early onset Alzheimer's. And I also am part of a support group that is mainly older people who are taking care of their spouses. And so they gave me a lot of perspective on how, like, you need to live your life and you have to also try to take care of yourself too. And I think because I found the older like space before I found Lorenzo's house, and they were the first people I asked when I had to choose between taking the full ride to Brown or staying home and being a caregiver. And because they're like in their 80s, they have a better perspective on life, and they told me to take the scholarship and you'll figure out the rest.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I think the power of these spaces across all stages of your journey. And then in addition, at Lorenzo's house, we have what's called Shine On, which is a space for those whose person has passed. Personally, I know that, you know, when We know how the journey ends. There is no cure right now, right? We know how this journey ends. And so we have Shine On space for those whose person has passed. We have a children's group, a teens group, a young adults group. And then last month, we actually launched it in our adult care partner space. But it's a space because you know, we only understand this journey. Younger onset dementia is such a different journey than so many other conditions. And so having a grief space that really speaks to the unique journey that we have walked is so, so powerful. And we have members of our community that continue to come to Light Club, and we have Bright Brunch for female care partners and Light Lounge for male care partners, but they also are looking for a space to really talk about their grief and talk about what they're experiencing. And Olivia, this is going to lead into you so beautifully. So what are some spaces where you have found community and connection? How has connecting with others who understand this experience really changed your perspective?
So my primary places to find community were Lorenzo's house, of course, and my own family. And the Light Club and Shine On groups are all warm and welcoming, and so is the Youth Summit. And it's a great opportunity not only to learn about how dementia works and tips on caregiving, but to share your story through art, music, writing, and just speaking with other kids who understand. And I used to feel that the way I was doing things or what I was feeling wasn't right. But at the last Youth Summit and the Shine On session, the others shared that they were experiencing the same exact things that I was. And it made me feel much more comfortable with the way I handled my father's disease and all the stigma it brought on us. Friends in Light Club and the Youth Summit as a whole also shared good tips and stories on how they worked through some of their hardships, which were also enlightening and helpful for me.
Thank you. Thank you, Olivia. I think something that has been so powerful and has resonated with many of us in the Shine On space, right, is there is no right way to grieve and there's no right way to do this journey. And so the power of however you are navigating and handling it is okay. And just giving ourselves that grace and patience, right? It goes back to what Paige said, the power of giving yourself grace. So Colby, what about you?
My response is pretty similar to Paige. For me, connecting with others has been the biggest part of my journey. I mean, at 9 years old, my father started exhibiting mobility issues, and through misdiagnosis, it was challenging. I felt like I was stripped of normalcy, seeing all my friends like hanging out with their fathers, and I didn't have that. And when my father was first diagnosed, I felt so beyond alone, confused, and scared of what was to come next. And at 14, these were so intense to process. And luckily, my mother was on the hunt to find resources for our family, and she stumbled upon Lorenzo's house via a Google search. And this started my desire to spread awareness about dementia justice and my own personal story. This year, I'm so beyond fortunate and honored to have been named the MC for the 2025 Youth Summit. This provides me with a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to share my story in a place where everyone can feel connected and seen.
Thank you. And something that you brought up, Colby, is this idea of dementia justice. So this is something that has kind of risen to the surface from our sons and daughters, this idea of putting the word dementia in front of justice, right? So much of what I hear from all of you is how heavy and the stigma can be so thick and the journey can be so challenging. And so what does it mean to have a world that is empathetic and informed and understanding, right? The power of asking ourselves that question, what does dementia justice mean to you? What does that mean? And something, Olivia, you've shared before was, you know, dementia justice to you means that your dad can go to Disneyland, right? Like, that's so real. We have this beautiful carer in the UK. His name is Will. And because we're in 16 countries, we have this beautiful carer named Will. And he always says that being a carer should be viewed as a medal of honor and not a career gap. Right? I had to step away. I was a teacher before this. I taught kindergarten for 10 years, and I had to step away from the classroom to be my mom's full-time care partner because in Washington State, we got quoted $14,000 a month for her care. I'm going to let you know I wasn't making $14,000 as a teacher. And so it was as a family, it was, and my dad ended up getting sick, and so he could no longer be her carer. And so we made a decision to that we had, I mean, I had to step away from the classroom to care for her. And so she moved in with my husband and I, and I became her full-time carer overnight. And so we're just really, we have learned from our sons and daughters, like the three of them here, is this power of, there's power in healing and community, but we also want to fight back. Right? Like, it's unfair. It's unfair that I had to walk this journey. It's unfair that they're walking this journey. I always say, I'm like, I am so glad I know you, but I wish I never had to meet you. Right? I wish I wasn't in this room right now with all of you, because it's so unfair and it's so challenging. I'm glad we have each other, but just the power of healing and community, but really this idea of advocating for dementia justice and making it a little bit better for the next son or daughter who walks this journey. And then the next question is kind of about this idea of advocacy and raising awareness. And so, Paige, I'm going to start with you. But what do you wish the world knew about younger onset dementia to make you feel the most seen and supported? How would you want your friends or your neighbors or the world to show up for you and your family? What are some actions or concrete tips?
So making clear that Alzheimer's is not a normal form of aging and caregiving is not a normal familial role. And at the heart of everything, that caregiving families need help. We can't prevent the amount of emotional pain dementia brings to the family. Watching your parent lose their personality, the roles of children having and the parent having to switch is heartbreaking and it's exhausting. And so while that part might not be preventable, we have to do something about the financial burden, because that is something that is preventable. And the cost of care is tearing families apart, and the burnout of caregiving is costing even the lives of caregivers themselves. And the bleak part is that the Trump administration is gutting almost all social programs, specifically Medicaid. So I don't have any trust that things will be better within these next 4 years. So for now, friends and neighbors who know a caregiver, please just keep checking in and asking what they need and how you can help, either by bringing over a meal or taking care of a weekly chore that they don't have time for, or just hanging out with the person who has dementia, because a lot of times people with dementia are severely isolated, and just like anyone, they get lonely too. So while long-term care solution is my dream for the country, this administration is not the one who I expect it from. And in this case, we really have to show up for one another.
Thank you. Thank you, Paige. And Olivia?
I wish that people would learn more about how their reactions, whether it's repulsion or callousness, matter more than they might think. Unkindness will only add to the suffering family strife. I want friends and neighbors to go out and learn about the disease. They can't offer to help Daddy anymore because he's already passed, but I would have liked it if they went and tried to understand from either firsthand accounts of people's experiences or from a description of dementia's effects what we are actually dealing with. And if they offered to show up, they should have actually shown up, because some people didn't. And I really would like the whole world to know about dementia and its effects, not just the people around me. The same goes for other similar diseases. I know that I need to actually research some of these diseases before I exhibit any stigma about them. And also, like Paige said, people with dementia often do feel isolated. Daddy had a lot of friends from his past, but they kind of broke off and started to just ignore him because he wasn't the same anymore. And that just really affected him, because something he needed too was connection in his time of need.
100%. I mean, mic drop, Olivia. I don't even have words. Yes. Everything. And everything you said, Paige. Oh, you guys, I have goosebumps. You know, we talk a lot about stigma, right? Especially for younger families, and this idea of really feeling unseen and unsupported. And Olivia, this question is for you. Is, have you experienced stigma as a daughter walking with a parent with brain changes? And how has this experience, how have you navigated this experience?
So my experiences with stigma aren't quite as concrete as some others that I've heard in Light Club and Youth Summit, but my family was often excluded from parties or other activities that we would have been invited to, or we used to be invited to, since it was hard for others to see what Daddy had become. And some people even offered to help us, but never responded when we told them what they could do. And so we didn't attend their parties, we made our own. And when people who we didn't know looked at us strangely when we went out, we ignored them. Instead of bringing more trouble to our already stressful lives, we let the people that cared about us matter more than those who didn't.
Olivia, you are so wise. You know, we talk a lot. Yeah, I know. I know. We talk a lot about this idea of stigma. And so something that our young people, specifically the sons and daughters, have built is called the Empowerment Plus model. And so it's a three-step approach for recognizing when we experience stigma. And that's that moment felt unfair or uncomfortable. And then we access this collective toolkit that they're building at Youth Summit, that we're building in Light Clubs, that we're building in Shine On. And then we respond. And when we respond, our response empowers ourselves, and a response can be responding, and another response can be no response, can be ignoring, right? And so we empower ourselves in how we respond, and then we also empower others through that response. And then the last piece is really reflecting on that experience. At Youth Summit last year, we have this girl. She's kind of our, her name's Jessica. She's from Utah, and she's kind of our Empowerment Plus girl. She teaches the model she has for the last couple years, and she really helped us build this model. And she shares this experience at Costco, where she was at Costco with her dad, and he kept chewing up the food and then spitting it out. And so she was noticing all these looks around her. And so what she did is, her 14-year-old self, she stood up and she stood and got a bag and she blocked her dad so that other people couldn't see that. And she didn't say anything to anyone else. She stayed calm. She handled this moment. Her mom was shopping through Costco. She was just standing there, and she was able to understand that her response really empowered herself. It was respectful to her dad, so it empowered her dad and it empowered others. She shared this at Youth Summit last year, and I got an email the day after Youth Summit from this woman in Idaho. And she said, "Hey, Patty, I want to let you know that my daughter, today we were at Starbucks, and she was with her dad as well, and he was shaking his coffee cup, and the coffee was going everywhere. And she just calmly stopped. She cleaned it up. She responded in that moment, and her mom was reflecting with her in the car. She's 13. Her mom was like, how'd you know what to do in that moment? She's like, I didn't know what to do, and I'm 47. And the girl said, well, I heard Jessica share about her experience at Costco at Youth Summit yesterday, so I knew what to do. So they're really building this collective toolkit, and they're sharing their ideas, and we're really creating this space that allows us to feel seen and supported and know how to respond in the moment. The last piece, I want to make sure we leave about 5 minutes for questions. So the last question I'm going to ask, I know you guys are probably looking at your questions, but I'm going to do the last question just so that we can leave time for audience questions. And that question is, if you could give a bit of light and encouragement to another young person just starting their journey, what would it be? And Colby, can we start with you?
Absolutely. Thank you, Patty. Some light that I would share with people new to this journey would be to have an open mind. Don't shut down the opportunities that arrive just because you feel uncomfortable or hesitant. There is so much good that can come from one decision. It can even change your life.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, I'm inspired. Paige, your turn.
Take everything one day at a time, handle the things that are in your control, and try not to stress about the rest. Live your life as best you can. Your parents would want that for you, and always ask for help. You'd be surprised how many people are willing to help you if you ask. And building your communities, finding spaces like Lorenzo's house is the only way to get through this.
100%. Thank you. And Olivia?
The whole journey is something out of the ordinary, an experience that may feel isolating. But you're not alone. Everyone in your family and in Lorenzo's house is there to support you, and we're all going through the same thing. And always look for those moments of happiness and light, because those are the beautiful memories that will stay with you forever.
Thank you, Olivia. I want to leave some time for any questions from the audience. Connor told me, the tech guy over there that we like, he told me that if anyone had questions, that this was a microphone to use so our incredible panelists, Olivia, Colby, and Paige, can hear. So does anyone have any questions or any thoughts even?
This is wonderful. Oh, I so commend all three of you for living the life that you were given, and you are so mature. Every one of you, I came a little bit late, so I don't know your ages, but you are really, really something. Just makes me cry. And my husband had a stroke, and he was older, 61, though, and our kids were not teenagers. They were young adults. But their lives were always affected, and they still are, caring about me and keeping me going. And but my question is, will we have a house like this in Minnesota?
So we are actually a virtual organization. So all of our programs that I guess I could have maybe told you what programs we do, and I should have had my info. We have a resource table, so should have had it out. You guys got to come get bracelets. But we provide virtual supports for families affected by younger onset dementia. So everything that we do is free and virtual. We do a match, which is a one-to-one care-to-care connection of a peer of a similar profile. So we actually have some members of our Lorenzo's House family here at the conference. And so they've been connected with each other, and they'll go and get lunch or share advocacy strategies. And so that's one thing that we do. So there are in-person local people in the Minneapolis area. We have our clubs, which are our virtual support group. So we get on Zoom room just like this, and we have a young children's group for 4 to 7 year olds, 8 to 12 year olds, 13 to 17, and then 18 plus. And then we also have a light lounge for male care partners and a bright brunch for female care partners. And then on the third program we have is a virtual youth summit. So that takes place on June 20th and 21st. Our first year we had 21 young people in a Zoom room. Last year we had over 200 young people. And this year we're projected to have 400 young people. Yeah. Yeah, ready for that, Colby? No. You are. I know it. I'm teasing. Any other? Thank you, though. Yeah, go ahead.
I have this, so.
Yeah, that's of course. Right.
My husband was diagnosed about 3.5 years ago with young onset Alzheimer's. Our three kids are in their 20s, so they don't live with us. It's been a struggle for me to figure out, like, what I should tell them or not tell them. If I can call and cry, if that's too hard for them or not. Just figuring out those things has been tricky for me. If you can shed any light on that.
Any light from either three of you?
I don't mind answering if that's okay. For me personally, my sister, who is 21 now, she was in college for the majority of the early parts of this journey. And I think that she was in a lot of denial. And I think that sharing with your kids is really important, because I feel like they deserve to know too. And I think it will benefit you as well, being able to get that off your chest and having other people who will understand.
Thank you, Colby.
I'm 23, and I'm the main caregiver for my mom, and so I think everybody should be on the same page, because it can't just be on one person to handle it all. It has to be a whole village to take care of everybody. And I get a lot of comments too about, like, I being your age and being able to handle this or managing it, basically, I don't know how I could do it. But I say the same thing for people who are older than me too. I don't know how they do it. I wouldn't, like, having kids and a career, that seems more stressful than being in my early 20s where I don't have any kids and I have more of the energy for it. But I think any stage of life, this is regardless really, really hard. It has to be shared throughout the entire family.
Totally. Thank you. Thank you, Paige. Thank you, Colby. I think for me, you know, I now lead our programs at Lorenzo's House, but I was in denial as well, right? And my dad was trying to protect me. And then we reached this point where he couldn't protect me anymore, right? We couldn't shield it anymore. And I wish he would have, I mean, I was there and I was coming, but it was at a point where, you know, I was coming and we were doing these things and I was connecting with him. But my dad tried to keep a lot of things hidden from us, and until he reached this point where it was a breaking point. And truthfully, like, caregiving's what got my dad. You know, the stress of caring was really, really hard for him. He was older than my mom. And so that also was an impact on this. And I mean, I was in denial and I was, but I wish my dad would have let us in a little bit earlier.
I can partially answer the question that you posed, plus I do have a question, and that is absolutely tell your children. Absolutely. So I wish this program had existed 60 plus years ago.
100%.
Because I was 9 when my mom was diagnosed, but it took them close to 3 years to figure out, and Alzheimer's actually wasn't her primary diagnosis, but it was the primary symptoms. And we were told to keep it a secret. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it stayed in the family, and we were told to keep it a secret. So actually, one of my questions is, how were you told about what was going on with your parent? And what were you told to do with that information?
Anyone? Go ahead, Olivia.
It was like 8 years ago, so I was about 8 years old. I didn't really understand what the diagnosis meant, and I don't even really remember being told, but I know that mommy did expressly say it to me, and I just thought that when daddy was on long-term disability from his job, that he was just going to stay at home and we could play together, but then it just kind of turned into a thing where it just slowly started to degrade. And I mean, that's how I learned about it. And then we just went from there, and I kind of kept it a secret from everybody. And
Thank you for sharing, Olivia. Anyone else want to answer? Go ahead, Paige.
Yeah, I found that doctors were really empathetic when they gave the diagnosis.
What?
I actually had to call them. It was more of like I had to reach out and like pull the diagnosis out of them. They were just a little either like too busy to take the time to actually call me and give us the formal diagnosis, but there was like a lot of waiting involved, and I had to keep calling the office and like waiting to get those results back, and then they finally gave me the results, like, oh yeah, your mom has Alzheimer's. And that was basically how they did it.
Totally.
And there was nothing that was preparing me for it. It was just really blunt, and then it was a 1-minute phone call, and then that was it. Then I remember taking her to doctor's appointments after that, and I would share like all the struggles that I'm going through about how she is in denial of her diagnosis, and that comes with the diagnosis too, not believing that you even have Alzheimer's is part of it.
For sure.
And her primary care provider started yelling at my mom, saying like, your daughter's trying so hard to keep everything under control. You just need to get over it, and you need to believe her. And there's a lot of lack of understanding of how even Alzheimer's works too. And so having the doctor yell at somebody who can't understand it is also another sign of just how our doctors are so completely untrained and robotic.
100%. Yeah. And I mean, what you said too, this misdiagnosed, undiagnosed, it's a story we hear over and over and over. We often have families that say they were diagnosed with bipolar or depression or adult onset ADHD. I had a family the other day that when someone reaches out to Lorenzo's house, we do what's called the lighthouse. So we do a one-on-one phone call or Zoom call with every person that reaches out. And I had this woman who shared with me, and she said her doctor said to her, well, that's just how all men are. When she was explaining that what she was experiencing and how what was happening in the behaviors. And so you're so dismissed. Right? You're so unseen, and you're misdiagnosed, and you're dismissed in these moments when you need help and support. So just, yeah, it's so real. But I want to honor time. I am the worst moderator. I could talk to them all day, okay? So I just love them. Olivia, thank you for your beautiful words of wisdom and the way that you communicate with such poise. Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity.
Colby, Thank you. Thank you for your courage, and you can just feel your enthusiasm, your energy, your passion for just really wanting to change the world. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Patty, for providing me this space.
You are so, every time you're like, thank you. I'm like, man, thank you. Paige, thank you. Your understanding and your articulation and your bravery that you are walking while also wanting to elevate the voices of other carers and young people is admirable. Every time I'm in a Zoom room with you, I'm like, wow, okay, thanks for inspiring me. And I just so thankful for your for you being part of this panel as well. Thank you all for spending some time in this room with us. We have a table out there. It's lorenzoshouse.org, but please stop by. We have a table at the resource table. I should have had my stuff. Come get a bracelet. Our young people, Olivia made bracelets last year. We make bracelets in Zoom rooms as another way to informally connect. So thank you for being here. Thanks for spending some time with these incredible humans. And I'll see you guys at the resource fair. Thank you.